Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I'm here because you have a right to know. I'm here because you matter. Are you subscribed to our K-Files? Look, if you're not, scoot over to my website and subscribe. You'll see where it says K-Files, right in the middle of the screen. You have to scroll down a little bit. Big link says K-Files. Click that and subscribe. That's our free weekly newsletter, and it's absolutely free, and it's a good one. And been around since 2000, so, you know, why don't you have it? Our members community has also been around, not since 2000, but it's been around for a number of years now. The show is 100% listener-supported. Without your support, we can't be here. Without your support, we can't bring you breaking news interviews like we've done for years. Without your support, we can't do any of it. So if you're not yet a member, nobody but you can fix that. Now, in the members community, there's tons of stuff, extra things for people who are supporting the show. So look at that list. It's on the website, kevinsmithshow.com. Just go over there, scroll down. You'll see an ad right there on the left. It's got a long list of things, and that's a partial list of what's in the members community. $7.50 a month. That's 25 cents a day. That's what it comes out to. So it's not expensive, and you got way more value than $7.50, believe me. One of the things is you get to watch the show every night, and that can at times be very, very important. So if you're not a member, join tonight, okay? At the top of the show, I always say, I'm here because you have a right to know and because you matter. Have you given much thought to what that's about? I mean, you have a right to know, but if you don't matter, then nobody's going to tell you. Well, you do matter, and you have a right to know. Tonight, we're going to be taking a look at establishment academia as it relates to the world of the strange and unexplained, specifically to the hunt for extraterrestrial life. There have been some developments, and there will be some praise and some criticism tonight of establishment academia as we take a look, a long, hard look, a very piercing look, at these new developments in academia related to the hunt for extraterrestrial life. So if you are a person given to academia, you're a person who loves academia, you want to stay tuned. You might even like this one. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I apologize for that squeal. It was caused by Brent from Wyoming. It's his fault. He did it, so we'll have to talk with him about that. But anyway, we're tonight talking about academia. And before you shrivel up like a dried prune and say, I don't want to hear about no academia, calm down and sit down and open your mind and let's think about this a little bit, because there are some big developments happening in academia related to the hunt for extraterrestrial life. And it's a small step indicating, I think, a big shift. And so we're going to dig into that just a bit here tonight. You know, I say things once in a while about people with doctor's degrees. I have one, and you know, I don't wear it on my sleeve, and I tend to disdain people who do. Who have a doctor's degree and wear it on their sleeve. I say things from time to time that whenever I do, when I dive into it, I get all kinds of very critical email and all kinds of supportive email as well. When I dive into talking about how the people of establishment academia have just about 1,000% negative batting average. How they get almost everything wrong up front. Now, it's masked by time. Someone comes up with a new idea, and establishment academia poo-poos the idea, ridicules the person, sometimes absolutely drives them out of their career, ruins their lives, and then lo and behold, a few years later, usually a few decades later, it's proven that person was right, and the grand poobahs of academia were dead wrong. And the only way that that new idea gets to see the light of day is when those grand poobahs of academia that were dead wrong are finally long dead. And then that new idea becomes the new established order in whatever field we're talking about. And then it's just accepted, you know, it is establishment at that point. And it's just accepted as, well, of course this is real. Of course this is true. Now, a good example of that, of course, is Einstein. Up until Einstein, Newtonian physics was physics. And when Einstein came along, he stepped right over Newtonian laws of physics with his general theory of relativity and his special theory of relativity. And he was ridiculed, he was chided, he was derided, they made life hell on him, but in the end, they had to come around and they had to say, excuse me, please sir, would you please honor us by joining our group? And now, Einsteinian physics is accepted as establishment physics. And if you don't believe that he's correct, then the grand poobahs are dead set against you. This is the way establishment academia works. It's the way establishment science works. And I'm very often vocal about it, as I am being here tonight describing it. This is the way it works. Now, establishment, the establishment in any field is not 100% bad. If we didn't have the establishment in just about every field of our society, then there would be chaos. And I don't mean riots in the street, although if you didn't have, you know, what is law and what is law enforcement? It is a form of the establishment. And so if you didn't have that, you could have riots in the street. Maybe you would, maybe you wouldn't, probably would. But establishment is, you know, that applies not only to law and law enforcement. It does apply there, but it applies to science. It applies to government. It applies to economics. It applies to religion. And it applies to education. Education is the glue of establishment. Education is how all of these various forms of the establishment, these various institutions of the establishment, it's how they pass the establishment forward into the next generation through education. And that's not 100% bad. In fact, there are parts of that that are very good, very positive. It's why there is stability of any shape or form. So parts of it are very good. But where establishment goes wrong is when the forces of society elevate it to a godlike position and then become the servants of the establishment. The establishment grows out of a society and says, we think these norms are worth preserving, and so we are, you know, we as a society are going to set up this institution to preserve these norms and to pass them forward into the next generation. But that means the establishment is an outgrowth of and therefore the servant of society. Now, where it gets bad is where that gets turned upside down. And where what happens is, for instance, in academia, somebody goes to school and they make good grades and they end up going to university and they make good grades and then they get a master's degree and then they get a doctor's degree, and everybody who is around them sort of looks up to them as, man, that's somebody really special. Well, listen, just because you have a PhD doesn't mean you're somebody really special. It means you have done something that is itself special. You have done something special. That has nothing to do with being special. Being special is something all of us can do, should do, whether we have the opportunity to go get a formal degreed education or not, or whether we had the opportunity and decided that's not for us. That has nothing to do with being special. That's doing. Being special is something all of us can do and should do, and we should realize that every single one of us can be and should be really special. But back to academia. Academia has been turned upside down so that the establishment of academia is more now the ruler than the servant of society. Because as people look at all these PhDs and they say, oh, well, Dr. So-and-so said this and Dr. So-and-so said that, and you know, Dr. XYZ says this. And, you know, this is just one of the most brilliant people I've ever known. And, oh, Dr. So-and-so. Well, that goes to their heads. And they start thinking that doctor means somebody special. It's something special, but it's not somebody special. And so it sort of, they get this sort of inflated ego. And then what happens? They fall into the trap of trying to become one of the grand poobahs in their field. See, we should never, ever even recognize a grand poobah in the field of science or education or in any field. No grand poobahs. They're just people like you and me. Cut them, they bleed. They have to have oxygen, water, and air, and food. They're just like you. But they fall into that trap of, thinking that they either can become one of the grand poobahs or they are one of the grand poobahs. And the trap is just thinking that grand poobahs, you know, the potentates of science and education even exist. But they do. I mean, they believe that. They fall into that trap. And then a new idea comes along that challenges what they've written, what they've been taught, and what they have come to the most evil word in human speech outside of religion is, if you use it outside of religion, is belief. They have come to believe things. And then they have come to believe that their belief is knowledge. Now, I said that is the most evil word outside of the field of religion. Here's why. Belief fits in religion. Belief is faith, and it fits in religion because that's what it's about. But outside of religion, you either know or you don't know. And if you don't know, then you investigate more, and you study more, and you experiment more, and you analyze more until you do know. And you may end up at the end of your life with some handful of questions, probably many, where you still have to say, I don't know. But the problem with academia has been, because what is academia? It's the glue, it's education, it's the glue that holds all of the various institutions of establishment together. And the problem with academia has been that they've fallen into this thought system that there are these grand poobahs, there are these potentates of science and potentates of literature and potentates of history, and that's nonsense. And a new idea comes along and it challenges what they have come to believe, and they dismiss it out of hand. They're in a position because they're the professor of something, or they are the chairman of the College of Astrophysics, or maybe they're the president of a university, or maybe they're the chief scientist at a laboratory, whatever. They're somebody, you know, in their way of thinking. And they dismiss this new idea out of hand without testing, without experimentation, without analysis, and really thinking it through. They just dismiss it. That's what they did with Einstein. And then he turned out to be correct. And they turned out to be jackass fools. That's the way this works. So establishment is not 100% bad. But establishment that has experienced the topsy-turvy effect, where they're no longer the servants of society, but they have become the masters of society, that is evil. And it's anti-human, it's anti-growth, and it is anti-progress, and it is in that position where the establishment ends up being wrong almost all the time. And I've talked about this lots. I've talked about that. You've heard me talk. You probably can tell me right now the next 3 minutes of what I'm about to say, because I have said this until I am blue in the face. And why? Because I want people to get this. You see, it was the very best, most educated modern science that once said the earth is flat. At that time, it was the best, most educated modern scientists saying the earth was flat. And when a guy came along and said, "Now, wait a minute, the earth is not flat, the earth is a ball, it's a sphere," they decided he needed to die. And they kept telling everybody the earth is flat and it's the center of all the heavens. And another guy came along and he said, "Now, wait a minute. You know, I've got this telescope thing. Take a look. You can see those planets are round and they're moving around the sun. And the earth is moving around the sun." And even though that guy was a close personal friend of the Pope, he spent the last years of his life under house arrest. Because modern science, the best, smartest, most educated, best modern science, said the earth is flat and everything in the heavens revolves around the earth. So they could kill one guy, they could put the other one in house arrest until he died, and he got house arrest because, instead of death, because he was a friend of the Pope. They could do that. But you know what they couldn't do? They couldn't change the fact that these guys were right. And they couldn't change the fact that they were dead wrong. So this is kind of the sorry state that academia has been in, particularly related to science, for many centuries. It may be changing. We'll be back right after this.
And you're listening to The Kevin Smith Show, also known as the world's hottest talk show host.
You don't know why.
All right, welcome back. All right, just a little bit more about academia of the past, and I'll speed this up now. But look, the best, most modern science in existence was teaching that there are no planets outside of this solar system right up till 1995. Now, some of you are about my age, or you're a little older, and you remember, this is what we were taught in school. Right up till 1995, they were teaching this. So some of you, quite a bit younger than me, were taught this. There are no other planets outside of our solar system. But in 1995, somebody found one. So, and now there, you know, there's like 700, I think, confirmed, and there's another 1,700, I believe, that they're working on confirming. They're just out there. They're everywhere. So here's the point. Academia has been both the protector and stabilizer of science and its enemy. And it's doing that today. It is a protector of science, but it is also the enemy of science. And the reason that I say it's the enemy of science is because of this entrenched grand poobah, this entrenched grand potentate idea that they've got about some of their number that are just like the grand potentates of science. And well, if he said it, it's true. Now, I'll give you one right now. He's dead, and so is his nonsensical theory, and that is Charles Darwin. And every time I say this, I get email from people telling me how ignorant I am. I've read the same books you have. I've been to university. I've studied science. And what you might not know is that at one point I was taking pre-med courses and decided to change directions, but did very well in them. And the point is, you may think I'm ignorant, but that's because I don't believe this tenet of scientific religion that you have believed. And it makes you very uncomfortable when I tell you it is religion. But it is. That there is adaptation, provable. That there are changes within species lines, provable. That there are trans-species fossils where a snake is becoming a monkey, never been found. It's not provable. And furthermore, the evidence that we have for extraterrestrial presence, the evidence, physical evidence that we have for extraterrestrial presence on this planet going way, way back in time indicates that the basic structure of Darwin's theory of evolution is fallacy. We don't have time to get into that tonight, but I've gotten into it before, so you can go back in the archives and find it. So what is it that's up? Because I said there may be something happening here. There is something happening, and it may indicate a big shift. It's a small step, but it may indicate a big shift. So let's go to one of the grand poobahs of science from days past. Everybody knows Dr. Carl Sagan. He was a very smart man. And now who is it that makes people a grand poobah? It's all the fools around them and all the unwashed masses that bow and scrape and, oh, well, you know, Dr. Sagan says this, Dr. Sagan says that, Dr. Sagan, Dr. Sagan, Dr. Sagan. And he gets elevated to being a grand poobah. Well, let me tell you, Sagan's not a grand poobah. Not really. But, I mean, he's considered to be one, but there are no real potentates in science. There are smart people, and there's lots of them. And sometimes it's a scientist who's never gotten any recognition at all that's just as smart or smarter than one of these poobahs who has an answer that to some big, big issue, some big, big problem, and nobody will freaking listen to him. But Sagan was a smart guy. And he was one of those scientists that could kind of communicate with the unwashed masses, and he was on television, and he was on radio, and he was, you know, he was kind of the face of science for a while. Carl Sagan wrote a book. The title of this book is The Demon-Haunted World, Science as a Candle in the Dark. Published in 1995. That's when it was first published. The Demon-Haunted World. Well, this has started, you know, it's kind of been resurrected, and people are writing about this book again. He used the word demon, they say, not in its religious use, but in its classical Greek use. And it is an anglicized classical Greek word, daimon. And that just means spirit. Kind of like when people say, someone says, well, when are you going to do that? And the other person says, when the spirit moves me. Daimon. That's the Greek word. And it was never used in any connection to something evil until the Septuagint was translated. That is the Hebrew scriptures when they were first translated into the Greek language. And at that point is the first time in history that the word was ever used to mean something evil. But today, if we say demon, people think of something evil, but the word is the word. It came from where it came from. And, I mean, if they, instead of calling these evil spirits demons, if they had called them sandwiches, then today everybody would think the word sandwich means something evil. And you and I know it's something to eat. So that's what happened to the word. And he wrote this talking about the necessity to take a look at new ideas, new propositions, and examine them. Now, I agree with what he said here, because he says, look, you take the new ideas, the new propositions, you examine them, you test them, you do experiments. And then once they're proven to be false, if they are, if you have somebody that continues to promote those and people continue to believe them even after they have actually been examined and tested, and you know, they've been, experiments have been run and analysis has been done, and people still believe in this, then it is supposition, it's speculation, it's belief, it's religion. It becomes a religion. And he's right. But he also said that science needs to be open to these new propositions. And science needs to not just dismiss them out of hand, but to consider them. Put them to the test. Examine them. See if they actually are the real thing or not. And if they prove to be, and establishment science refuses to accept it, even though the evidence says it's correct, then establishment science is engaging in supposition, speculation, and religion. Now, that's the point of the book. I agree with him on that. However, Carl Sagan also said some other things that because he was considered to be one of these grand poobahs, people just accepted it as though it was written on tablets of emerald and handed down from the very throne room of God himself. You know, before I say it, don't you? You know which one I am referring to. It's called the Sagan Standard. He said, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Cute. However, that's the Sagan Standard. People quote this. I hear it right here on this show. I have had guests say that, and I've challenged it when they say it. There is no such thing as extraordinary evidence. It doesn't exist. I'll explain in a moment, but the Sagan Standard is extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. The Kevin logic is that's one of the dumbest things ever said by a smart man. Now let me explain, and then I'm going to show you a step being taken in academia related to this. Extraordinary claims. What the heck is that? It's only extraordinary because you've never heard it before or you've never experienced it. It's new and outside of your realm of experience and knowledge. That's why you think it's extraordinary. There's no such thing as an extraordinary evidence. There's just evidence. Now, if I tell you that Zarkon from Zelag has his mothership parked out here in orbit, and he's going to teleport down here at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, and I give you the spot, the address where he's going to be. Now, you might think, well, that's an extraordinary claim. Well, at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, if Zarkon from Zelag transports to that spot at 4 p.m., there's your evidence. It's not extraordinary. It's just evidence. He just did it. It's just physical evidence. Now, if he doesn't, then what I have said is not extraordinary. It's a lie. So, folks, let's take the gloves off. Let's get the sugar coating off of this. Let's talk about what we're really talking about here. I mean, let's dive into this. There are no extraordinary claims. There are claims that are outside of our knowledge and personal experience. That doesn't mean they're extraordinary. It may mean you have limited knowledge and limited experience. Think about that. It may say more about you or about me. There's no such thing as an extraordinary claim. However, there are true claims and there are lies. Let's don't sugarcoat it. There's true claims and there are lies. When Einstein claimed what he claimed in his theories of relativity, people thought it was extraordinary, but it was true. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We're talking about this evening on the Kevin Smith Show. The question is, academia finally getting it? As we went away for break, I was talking about Carl Sagan, and I was talking about what has come to be known as the Sagan Standard. You see, this fiction has become one of the tenets of the religion of science, and this is absolute fiction, because there is no such thing as extraordinary evidence. There's just evidence. That's all. Now, you have heard me say, and I'll say it again for those who are new, and I'll say it again for those of you who didn't catch it, and the rest of you, well, you already know it. Pick a president, any president of the United States of America. I don't care. Start with George Washington and come all the way up to Obama. It doesn't matter. Pick a president. Now, if someone made the claim this president committed a murder, I don't mean he started a war or he ordered troops into battle. I mean he himself committed a murder. Some people would say, well, that's an extraordinary claim. No, it's not. It's an accusation. Now, the evidence that it takes to prove he committed a murder is exactly the same type of evidence it would take to prove you did it. Some people would say it's an extraordinary claim when you say the president committed a murder. No, it's not. It's an accusation. And I think some of them probably have. Some of the stories that we hear, But it's an accusation. That's all it is. Against a man. The office of president, yeah, that's high. The man is just like you. And the level of evidence it takes to prove, the type of evidence that it takes to prove he committed a murder is exactly the same evidence, same type of evidence it would take to prove you did it. There's no such thing as extraordinary evidence. Back to the alien beaming down at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. You might think that's an extraordinary claim, but it's not if he does it. If he doesn't do it, it's a lie. If somebody accuses somebody of murder and then they can't come up with the evidence to prove it, it is legally unfounded. It's a lie. It's an accusation without support. So let's take the kid gloves off here. No sugarcoating. This thing about it, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. What utter nonsense. And science has hung their hat on it, and that has been a detriment to science. Because they're looking for something that doesn't exist. They are requiring, for instance, if you start bringing up evidence about extraterrestrial life, and then perhaps evidence about extraterrestrial intelligent life, either one of those, they say, well, that's an extraordinary claim. It requires extraordinary evidence. No, it doesn't. It does not require extraordinary evidence. It just requires plain old evidence. If you say there's life on Mars, you know what you got to find? A one-cell bug living on Mars. That's not extraordinary evidence. If you say there's intelligent life out there, the evidence it takes is Zarkon from Z-Lag beaming in here to have a little talk with the scientists. All it takes is just produce the evidence. Evidence is evidence. That's it. But science adopted this holy writ from God Sagan, although he did not consider himself to be God, I don't think. But a lot of people had that kind of view of him, that he was a science god. And they have hung their hat on that. The Sagan standard, it even has a name. It's called the Sagan Standard. It's really the Sagan nonsense. There's no such thing as extraordinary evidence. It does not exist. There's just evidence. In fact, there's not anything that's really extraordinary when you think about it. You might say, well, if Zarkon from Z-Lag beams in here, Zarkon, that's extraordinary. No, it's not. You see, even if you don't know Zarkon exists, if he does, if he exists, he exists. Even if you don't know it. Therefore, he is as ordinary as you are. So this word extraordinary is truly a description of the depths of our own ignorance. Over in Scotland, there is a famous university, University of Edinburgh. Really famous. One of those books that I read that earlier when I said people write to me and tell me how ignorant I am when I challenge Darwin. Darwin's wrong. He's just wrong. And that's not a belief. That's rather provable. He's just wrong. But one of the books that I read was by a professor, Dr. A.E. Wilder Smith, no relation of mine, from the University of Edinburgh. And for those of you who are not familiar with him, get the book. It's called Man's Origin, Man's Destiny. Get the book. He's a scientist. Read the book. That's not the only one I read either. Edinburgh, famous university. Great university. A great university. I mean, it's just... its reputation is absolutely galactic. It's just a fantastically wonderful university. Some of the best professors, some of the best minds on the planet teach at Edinburgh University. Well, Edinburgh University is going alien. Are you shocked? Well, you shouldn't be. Edinburgh University is going alien because they are offering a new course. It is a course on hunting for extraterrestrial life. And the part of the course could sort of deal with, just life, a one-cell bug out there. But it also deals with intelligence. Extraterrestrial life. We're going to take a look at that course. I'm going to show you what they're going to be teaching. This is fantastic, and they're doing it online. And a lot of people say, an online university degree is, those days are over, folks. Get over it. I mean, this is one of the premier universities on this planet. And they're offering courses online. This is one of them. It's a 5-week course, and it's being taught by a PhD in astrophysics, and it is quite interesting. Because in week one, they are going to be taking a look at this question, or this issue, the definitions of life and how it originated on Earth. Well, now when they do this, this is a big, big problem. So I want to commend Edinburgh University. I want to praise them for taking the step. I want to commend them. But here is a constructive criticism. Maybe it's not a criticism, it's a caution. The definitions of life. I guarantee you those definitions will all be homoterracentric. In other words, those definitions are all going to be descriptions of life as we humans on this earth have observed life. Homoterracentric. We'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and welcome to those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. I'm glad you're here, and my sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. We were talking about Edinburgh University and a step they have taken in the right direction, and it's a small step, but it may indicate a big shift. As we went away for break, I was talking about this first week of this five-week course they are offering, and it's a course in hunting for extraterrestrial life, how to hunt for extraterrestrials. And the first week, they're going to deal with definitions of life and how it originated on Earth. And I said, a caution here, because this is bound to be homoterracentric. In other words, these definitions of life will be definitions, I am almost positive of this, will be definitions of life as we humans have observed life on this planet. Now, you might say, okay, how could we describe or define something that we haven't seen? And you're right, we can't. The point is, and the caution, is as these definitions are discussed, it would be nice, it would be good, and it would be academically and intellectually honest to say there may be life forms out there that are not anything like Earth. Now, I said Darwin's dead. I said that his theory is dead on arrival. But let's assume it's true. I think evolution does happen, but not Darwin's theory. I'll give him credit for thinking. I'll give him credit for thinking outside the box in his time. But I think that theory is dead on arrival. And I think the evidence is pretty clear on that. Evolution happens, but not like Darwin said. But that's the accepted dogma of the scientific religion. So let's say it's true. All right, if it's true, part of that theory is life happens. Now, if that's true, then it's going to happen in the context of the world it's on. So on Titan, it's a world, they tell us, where the atmosphere is just thick with methane, or as they say in the UK, methane. It's thick with it. So if life happens, then it's happening there using methane like you and I use oxygen. Or if it does happen there, it'll happen that way. It'll happen using what's there the way we use what's here. And oxygen, you know, we think, well, you've got to have oxygen in order for there to be life. No, you don't. We have life forms on this planet that will die when you expose them to oxygen. And by the way, do you not realize that the thing that you and I require, oxygen, do you not realize that's one of the most corrosive elements in all the periodic table? It's oxygen that causes skyscrapers to rust and come down and causes bridges to rust and come down. Oxygen can take on hard, cold steel and win. So we are breathing something that would be very deadly to other life forms, perhaps. Just like you couldn't go to Titan and breathe that atmosphere because you require oxygen. On Titan, if life happens, it'll happen in the context of Titan. So these definitions of life, I hope, are going to be broad enough so that the idea is introduced out there, off Earth, because this is all about extraterrestrial. This course is all about hunting for extraterrestrial. Terra is the name of the planet. extra off, off Terra. So, these definitions of life need to include the idea that out there it may not operate like it does here. And there may be life out there everywhere where there's no oxygen, where there's no water, there may be life. Even if they don't do that, I commend Edinburgh University for taking this step. I commend them because it is a step in the right direction academically for the academic world to move up into the reality that we are not alone in this universe. In the second week, they're going to take a look at early Earth environments when life first emerged and the various evolutionary transitions of life on Earth. That's what they're going to take a look at. Again, a caution. It's recently been discovered that Earth's early atmosphere, you remember when I said Darwin's dead? Well, scientific discovery is the reason I say that. Recent discoveries show that Earth's atmosphere at 500,000 years after the Earth formed was not at all like they've been teaching. And for Darwinism to work, you got to have these long periods where the Earth's atmosphere is very, very different, and then it evolves into something else, and then it evolves into something else, and these are the triggers that are causing biological evolution and so forth, and then biological evolution provide triggers that also change the atmosphere. And so it's a symbiotic relationship. Well, that symbiotic relationship didn't exist. The one that's described in Darwinism didn't exist because 500,000 years, not a million years, not 10 million, not a billion, not 3 billion years later, 500,000 years after this Earth formed, the atmosphere on this planet was pretty much the same as it is right now. So say the scientists. That's a recent discovery. Fairly recent, within this past 12 months. And so with the atmosphere not being what Darwin required, the series that Darwin sets up doesn't work. Whenever they talk about Earth's early environments at Edinburgh University in this course that they're going to be teaching, they're going to talk about when life first emerged. I bet they're not. I bet they're going to miss that. Because now with this new discovery, nobody's really sure. I mean, that new discovery about the atmosphere rocks Darwinism. Doesn't kill the idea of evolution, but it rocks Darwin's theory. They don't really know yet how to repair or replace that. So I bet that's what they're going to teach. Well, okay. I can't say for sure that's what they're going to teach, but I bet it is. Because they haven't had time to rework the theory and patch up the dogma yet. So they're probably just going to teach the dogma. But it's absolutely scientifically got no legs. Got its legs cut out from under it by science. All right, in the third week, they're going to talk about the prospects for life elsewhere in our solar system and the required conditions for a planet to be habitable. Again, this indicates that it's going to be Homo terracentric. What are the prospects for life elsewhere in our solar system? Well, the rest of this is right out of their syllabus, and the rest of the statement says what they're going to be talking about, the required conditions for a planet to be habitable. Habitable by whom? Habitable habitable by what? Homoterocentric life. Listen, organisms on this planet that do not require oxygen and in fact will die when you expose them to oxygen, they do exist. They live in pools of hydrocarbon deep, deep underground. They're allergic to water. Don't you realize that? They're allergic to water because water is H2O. That's oxygen. And so they are allergic to water, just like they're allergic to air with oxygen in it. It'll kill them. So whenever we talk about the prospects for life elsewhere in our solar system, let's talk about the context of environment on those planets. Let's talk about life developing within the context of those other worlds. You don't have to transplant our earthly conditions to another planet in order for life to be there. Here's the problem. The problem with this homoterocentric kind of thinking. It's a step in the right direction to offer the course. But the problem with this homoterocentric thinking is you're not looking for life out there. You're looking for us out there. And we're not. We're here. We developed here within the context of this environment. Now there may be some other planets flung out across the vast, vast spaces of the universe. There may be billions of other planets that are just like this. Maybe. But are we going out there looking for us, or are we going looking for life? If you're going looking for life, you look for life in the context of where it is. You don't look for us. So on Titan, there could be life right now. Intelligent life? I don't know. I don't think so. But life could be there, operating on methane like we operate on oxygen. Homoterocentric thinking, as you start looking for life off of this planet, means you're looking for us and for organisms that are like us. You know, even the smallest microscopic organism is very much like you here on this planet. And there are some people that you just listen to them talk and you hear the way they think, and you're sure they are an amoeba. But an amoeba is very much like you. It needs water. It needs food. And it needs oxygen, just like you. So over on Titan, you don't look on Titan for stuff like us. You look for stuff that would work in that context, in that environment. So, you know, this course is pretty heavily homoterocentric, and maybe there's no other way to go at this right now. And maybe the professor we'll point out some of these things that I'm pointing out. NASA certainly has begun to look for the possibility of life that is not like us. You know, they've got several studies going on trying to determine, well, how would you go about looking for life that's not like life on Earth? How would you test for it? How would you look for it? So NASA's thinking in these terms, and not thinking so much homoterocentrically, but you know, from the descriptions in this course, it sounds like this is going to be pretty homoterocentric. Maybe the professor will point some of these things out, and I certainly hope so. Let's take a look at the fourth week. Now, if you take this course in the fourth week is how to search for Earth-like planets orbiting distant suns and how to detect possible life there. So again, Homo terracentric. You're looking for here. It's here. You don't have to look out there for here. It's right here. But they're going to be looking how to search for Earth-like planets. Well, it would be interesting if we find planets out there that are Earth-like. That'll be interesting. Maybe sometime in the far distant future, we'll have a means of transporting ourselves to and from these other planets that are Earth-like. That'll be good. But you know something? It's still Homo terracentric. If you're looking for life, look for life in the context of the world you're looking on. If you want to find life on Mars, you look for life that would use the materials that are available on Mars. Not life like it is here on Earth. The conditions on Mars, well, the conditions on Mars are nothing like what we've been told. But they're not Earth-like. They're more Earth-like than we have been told, but they're not Earth-like. So life on Mars, if you want to find life on Mars, you look for life that would develop within the context of that environment and within the context of the materials that are there, the gases that are in the air, in the concentrations they are in, the minerals that are in the ground. You look for life that would use those things. But they're going to look for Earth-like planets orbiting distant suns and how to detect possible life there. It's interesting to me that this theory of Darwin's is such a religious theory for science. I mean, you know, if you say anything against Darwin, I know because I do, and then I get the emails. You say anything against Darwin, you get called stupid, you get called ignorant, you get ridiculed, you get laughed at, and yet their own scientists are coming up with discoveries that absolutely cut this off at the knees. Darwin's wrong. But if you believe, if you scientists believe that stuff, so ardently, why would you look for Earth-like planets orbiting distant suns and search for how to detect possible life there? Because if it's Earth-like, what you have here, Darwin's theory of evolution, would be at work there. If it's Earth-like, you got the same things happening. You have the same conditions. So if it's Earth-like, why would you look for possible life? Is it worded this way because deep down you know Darwin's dead? But this Homo terracentric approach is not a good approach. It's not a good approach at all. That is a criticism of this course. However, I mean, it's extremely narrow and limited. However, I still commend Edinburgh University for taking a step in the right direction. So far, everything that we've talked about from week one up through week four has all been about life, life, life. Just life, you know, could be one-celled, multi-celled, complex, but just life, any kind of life, Homo terracentric in its approach, but it's all been just about life. Week five, and this is, I think, the whole goal. Week 5. How Earthlings would be impacted by the discovery of an extraterrestrial intelligence. This fifth week is a departure. It is a massive departure from everything else that's been discussed for the first 4 weeks. For the first 4 weeks, definitions of life, how life evolved here, what the early Earth environment was, how life started here, when life started here, how life evolved here. It's all about life, 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 and then looking for planets outside of our solar system that are Earth-like, and trying to, how would you detect possible life there? It's all about just life, life, life. But week five finally gets to the point of the whole thing. You see, there was no week six discovering signs of intelligence, how to detect signs of extraterrestrial intelligence. There was no week seven, you know, how to detect levels of extraterrestrial intelligence. It's just bang, right to the heart of the matter. It is also homoterra-centric, but it goes right to the heart of the matter. How does finding extraterrestrial intelligent life impact us? It's all about us, isn't it? The whole course is that way. The whole course is homoterra-centric. It's all about us, us, us. But here, how would finding Zarkon from Zalag impact us? Now remember, this is being taught by one of the premier universities on this planet. Edinburgh University is one of the top universities on the planet, and it has some of the top science courses and top science professors on the planet. And this course takes you from ground zero to just trying to define what is life. In 5 weeks, it takes you to, how does finding extraterrestrial intelligence impact us? This is all about getting ready for the contact. That's what this is all about. This is all about getting ready for the contact. Week five is the goal. Week five is what it's all about. Everything else is a sugar coating around it. Everything else is sort of the marshmallow topping on a cup of hot chocolate. Everything else is fluff. This is what it's about. Here we have one of the premier universities on planet Earth offering this course on how to hunt for extraterrestrials, which I think is a good thing. They're offering this course, being taught by one of their great professors, but the goal is this. The goal is the meeting. We'll be back.
Virginia, and you are smart because you are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Okay, welcome back, and let me wrap up what I'm saying here about this fifth week, and then we'll open up the telephone lines, because I know some of you may want to challenge something that I have said. That's okay, you can do that. Some of you may want to agree with something I've said or ask questions about it. But I want to go back to this fifth week, and I want to make the point here. I want to make sure you get the point here. This fifth week of this course is the goal of this course. That's where it's headed. It's the climax of the course. And what they're going to teach is how Earthlings would be impacted by the discovery of an extraterrestrial intelligence. Okay, now what does that mean? You think if we find extraterrestrial intelligent beings out there, you think, you know, what, your right arm's going to fall off? No, that's not what they're talking about. This is all sociology, psychology, and religion. Sociology, psychology, and religion. That's what's going to be impacted when it's revealed that they have found extraterrestrial intelligence. You know, just because they find an extraterrestrial doesn't mean you're going to grow two hearts. Doesn't mean, you know, you're half your brain's going to go. It's not going to impact you like that. You're not going to lose your job just because they found Zarkon out there. But there will be sociological changes, and I'm including in sociological, I'm including governmental and economic upheaval. There will be sociological changes. There'll be philosophical changes. There'll be changes, big impact on certain religions and certain teachings of certain religions. Some religions teach all extraterrestrials are fallen angels and they're demons. Now, what are you going to do if Zarkon shows up here with a Bible tucked under his arm and wants to join your church? I mean, there's going to be impact sociologically, psychologically. Some people are not going to be able to handle this. Most will. Some people won't, because they are so wrapped up with their religious beliefs, and that includes the religion of science. It's going to be devastating on some religious beliefs. So this fifth week is the goal. Edinburgh University, one of the great universities of this planet, I mean truly one of the top universities on this planet, Edinburgh University is teaching a course that takes you from fluff to how to deal with the meeting. That is a huge shift. That is a big, big shift. This is a small step. It's one university. However, it's one of the monster universities. It's one university offering one course about all this. It's a small step. But you see, when Edinburgh University does this, there aren't too many other universities around the world that are going to chuckle and ridicule about it. There may be one or two others, but not too many. They're not going to be chuckling and ridiculing this. That's Edinburgh. Edinburgh University did this. Maybe it's okay for our little university to do this. And that's the way it starts. It just started. All right, I want to open up the telephone lines and give you the opportunity to call in and express your thoughts. You may have a question about something I said. You may want to challenge something I said. Maybe you want to agree with something I said. Doesn't matter. 623-444-5889 is the telephone number, and the lines are open. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hey, Brent.
I'd like to know how I caused that squeal.
Because I'm an American.
Oh, okay.
All right, see, now let me explain. Let me explain. Okay. I'm an American, and the American way is blame somebody else.
Oh, okay.
And your name came to mind, so I blamed you.
Okay.
<That's fine. laughs> Okay.
I'm going to go take a stab at something.
Okay. Stab
most
it.
Most of what you've been describing, and probably most of what this course is going to be centered on, is biological life. To look at it from a slightly different perspective, you have to look at it as what if there is a non-biological life. In this sense, you have to define what is life.
Mm-hmm.
What does biological life consist of? Let's start there. It takes something from the environment, processes it, and gives something back that is beneficial to the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're looking at a spiritual form of life, it takes something from the environment, processes it somehow, and gives something else that is something back to the environment that is beneficial to that environment.
Okay.
What if they are overlooking non-physical life? That's my opinion.
Well, I think they would necessarily, because they're only going to deal, these are scientists, they're only going to deal with what they can measure, what they can
put their hands on.
Yeah, what they can put in a test tube or weigh or in some way measure. And I don't think that we have scientifically reached the point where we can measure consciousness.
Yeah, that's...
I think we can observe...
Quantum leap there.
Yeah, we can observe consciousness. We can observe the existence of it. And we see the evidence of it. But as far as a scientist, they only deal with stuff they can measure.
Physical realities.
Mm-hmm. So I think you're right. Necessarily, I think this will be dealing with biological life, physical life.
Yeah. But good show, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
All right. Keep your hands off these controls, man. No more squeals. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. And Lance from the UK has sent me a flash message and wants to know, since you say Darwin is dead, how can you also say that evolution could exist? Well, look. Darwinism is a denomination in the religion of science. Just like in Christianity, you have Catholics, you have Orthodox, you have Episcopalians, Presbyterians, Methodists, Baptists, and the list goes on. Those are different flavors of ice cream, different flavors of Christianity. Well, in science, you have a denomination called Darwinism. There are other explanations other than Darwinism that depend upon or that put forth the idea of evolution. Darwin's not the only one, and he's just one denomination. Happens to be the biggest denomination in science, though. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia, and... I think I'd like to begin by throwing stones at a dead man, Charles Darwin. And the first stone I'm going to throw is that Darwin did not think outside of any box. Darwin was handed a box. The box was Malthusian thinking. Thomas Malthus was a guy who preceded Darwin a little bit, and was considered the smartest guy in the world at the time. And Malthus believed that the human race was a blight on the earth, and eventually was going to multiply itself to the point that it was going to run itself out of resources. It was going to exhaust the earth's resources, and that was going to be a disaster. And the best thing to do for man is to control the number of people on the earth, which basically introduced the science of eugenics. You know, how do you control the human race? How do you decide who's going to get to mate and reproduce and who needs to die off? And it's basically putting another cap. And in previous shows, Kevin, you have very nicely illustrated how humanity has been capped in a number of ways. And one of the caps that's been placed on man is who gets to reproduce and who doesn't, and who gets killed off and who gets to live. So this is the box that Charles Darwin was handed, and he was instructed to come up with a theory of life and evolution that places man somehow in this Malthusian box. The descent of man and the development of the theory of evolution was the result. And the basic message behind the theory, Darwin's theory of evolution, is that man is nothing special. Man is no different, doesn't hold any more weight against the vast biological scheme of things than the amoeba, than the monkeys, than crocodiles, than fish, than viruses. You know, man is no more important. So if you can put your mind into that kind of a box and believe that man isn't important anymore, then eugenics becomes a pretty digestible thought process. And so, you know, when it comes time to decide on which masses of people need to be wiped out, which elites, which groups of people are the chosen people that get to reproduce, you know, well, all right, that fits very nicely in the Malthusian Darwinian box. Now, a result of all that and being applied to academia and the training and indoctrination of the next generation, you know, by the next generation I mean Darwin's next generation, which was basically our parents, maybe our grandparents for some of the audience, it put people into a very predictable, programmable position mentally. In it made them very passive. It made them believe that they couldn't really think too clearly. They needed information handed to them by experts. It made them passive learners. You know, well, because there are no real geniuses except the people that the elites say are geniuses. And this fit nicely with the way that Andrew Carnegie and the Rockefellers decided that the education system was supposed to now start training people.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away, folks. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about the question, is academia finally getting it? And I think the answer to that is, seems like it. It seems like it. On the telephone, Steve from Georgia. Steve, we'll have to wrap it up pretty quick because we just have a few minutes left here and want to give some other folks a chance to call in. But I agree with you that Darwinism is a closed system. It's a closed system. It cannot allow for any extraterrestrials. It cannot allow for extraterrestrial intervention. It can't allow for anything except its theory. And that's why I said this recent discovery about the atmosphere of early Earth being pretty much what it is right now absolutely cuts Darwinism off at the knees.
Well, additionally, Kevin, the fact that Edinburgh is coming up with this program, this course, tells me that they don't feel like they can completely keep the lid on this box now. So when the genie comes out of the bottle, when the cork comes out, the genie comes out of the bottle, they want to be able to define how we see the genie. Mm-hmm. They're going to try to co-opt what is about to be revealed to all of us so that they can make sure that we respond the way they want us to respond.
Yep.
And people need to inoculate themselves mentally against this kind of programming by cutting off their doggone cable TV and starting to brush up on logic, grammar, and rhetoric and begin to apply critical thinking to this thing. Because it's going to be amazing, but for those who have their eyes open and their minds open and have been able to step outside of this Darwinian Malthusian box. And I guess I've thrown stones at a couple of dead guys here, but they deserve it.
Yep.
And I will cut off now, Kevin, and thank you for entertaining my call.
Okay, and thanks for the call. As always, great information and great thoughts, ideas. We have time for one or two more calls if you call right now. It is 623-444-5889. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Mike from Kentucky, a.k.a. Mr. Forrest Gump.
Okay.
I'm not a very smart man, Kevin. I'm kind of dumb. But, you know, it seems to me as though they're just playing games. One more shuffle of the deck, just playing games and trying to look respectable by doing it.
You know, yeah, I would agree with you, and that goes along with what Steve said, too, about they want to be able to control the dialogue. They want to control the way you see the genie. I agree. I mean, I think that's the case here. They are an establishment university, and they are doing what establishment does, and that is they're trying to control the flow of information. However, by stepping into this and ending that course with that fifth week talking about how is it going to impact us when we find extraterrestrial intelligence, that's the goal of the whole thing. I mean, if they cut out all the other weeks, that's what they were headed for. How is this, when we find out that there is extraterrestrial intelligence, how is it going to impact us? You see.
And you know, Kevin, that exactly was the goal of AlphaCom, to help put a buffer between that information and the public.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
so,
unfortunately, they twisted things around, made things happen so that it could not be released in that time frame.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now you have a major university stepping up to the plate here. And it's kind of a smooth transition into how is this going to impact you? And by having this in their course, I think what's going to happen is you're going to see a whole bunch of other universities start offering courses like this, and they're beginning to get people's minds ready to cope with the reveal. When it's revealed, they want to have people up to speed on it. Mike, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. Let me see if we have another call here before we run out of show. All right, ladies and gentlemen, 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you call right now, I have time to take your call, but you got to call right now. If you wait until we just have a minute left, you know, I can't do it. And that's what happened last night right at the end of the show. We got a flash message here and an email, actually, from Maya, who is Glenn Wordy's daughter. He was our guest last night. I didn't have a chance to read this, and in fact, because it came from the United States, Flash Message dumped it. I was able to recover it when I saw who it was from. But it says, thank you, Dad, for letting the public know the truth about UFOs and that they are real. I'm proud of you and all your hard work watching the night sky for countless hours and for being dedicated to your work. Perhaps others will become more aware of what potentially could be flying above their heads. Thank you, Kevin, for having my dad as a guest on the show. So I would have read that last night, but it came in too late, and because it came in from the United States, it gets dumped. I don't see the message. Flash messages are for people outside the U.S. and outside of Canada. And all I see is that we got a message, and I can see the name of who sent it, and then there's nothing in it. It gets dumped. I don't get to see it unless it's from outside the USA and outside of Canada. But I saw the name, and, you know, it's not a name like Smith. I mean, there's billions of Smiths on the planet. But Wordy, I said, well, that's got to be somebody related to our guest. And so I worked with it today and was able to recover the text of what was sent. So, Maya, there you go. And Glenn, you got a great daughter for standing up and saying, thank you, Dad. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're just about out of time now, and we don't have time for another call. So if you were just about to do that, well, sorry. We don't have time for it. Next time, call sooner. If you're not a member, you know, you didn't get to see the slides I put up tonight, you need to see them. And the way you can do that, even though you didn't get to see it tonight, if you join right now, this show goes up in our members community. The video goes up, and it's up there for 24 hours. You'll get to see it. And we do that every show, every single show. So you get to watch it live, but if you happen to miss watching it live, you can watch it later. And you have 24 hours to watch it till the next one goes up. The audio of each show goes in our archives as a podcast in our archives. That's in the members community. And look, you know, if you're not a member, you're missing a huge, huge, huge area of the show. It's not just watching. It's not just the archives. You also have the forums, you have chat, you have your own blog, you have your own friends page, you have your own photo album, your own video album. There's the video galaxy with some archive videos to watch of shows. And then there's some other things that are not shows that are in the video galaxy. They're not Kevin Smith shows. There's a library of free ebooks for you to download. And, you know, we can just go on and on and on and on and on. From time to time, we do special broadcasts. I do it as a gift to our members. It's not part of the contract. It's just a gift. But when we do that, it's in the members' community. And so you have to be a member. It's $7.50. You won't miss the $7.50. And it can mean the difference in whether we're able to stay on the air. Join us tonight, okay? All right, that's going to do it for tonight. My friends call me Steely. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.